This is Alex Pardo, and I got episode 392 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. What is up, my friends? Welcome to another masterclass here with my buddy Steve Johnson. And guys, what we're going to be covering on the podcast today is something that if you're an active real estate investor, if you're thinking about getting into this business, but if you are, if you do any type of direct to seller marketing and you are meeting with homeowners, particularly homeowners that are in distress, whether it's financial distress, circumstantial distress, the property could be distressed, regardless of what the situation might be. If you do not understand and know how to structure deals creatively, if you don't understand creative financing, you are leaving a lot of money on the table. And admittedly, this is an area where our team isn't as strong as we should be. And so right after I recorded this episode, one of the first things I did was send the raw file to one of my team members, our acquisitions manager, because Steve has such a unique ability to break down what many consider to be the complex, and he simplifies it. So, you know, Steve's been in this business a while now, I think since 2012, 2013, and he's done a bunch of creative deals. What understanding how to structure deals creatively, what it allows you to do is capitalize on more opportunities. There's a small percentage of sellers out there that are distressed that are willing to take your cash offer at 40, 50, 60, 65, maybe 70 cents on the dollar. And so this gives you the ability to be able to help more sellers convert more leads into deals and ultimately more deals into money in your pocket. So, you know, Steve talks about how to structure these things to get paid upfront, to get paid while you wait, and then to get paid at the end. You know, one of the things I drilled down and asked them that I know that in the past we have kind of struggled with is how to set up the conversation. What are the types of questions you need to be asking sellers? And ultimately, it's about them. It's about their situation. And you're taking what they want and you're reverse engineering it and breaking it down so that you can come up with a creative way to give them what they want and give you cash flow. Because ultimately, this business is about cash flow. And wholesaling is a great business because it allows you to generate a lot of capital and then hopefully put that into cash flowing producing assets. So there's not much different you have to do. It's just really understand how to put these deals together, how to carve them up, so to say. So we talk about what to be asking sellers, and he even takes and we break down and we do a case study on a deal he's currently working with. And let me just kind of give you the broad strokes of this deal. $175,000 after repaired value, and that's after you put in $8,000 worth of work, and the seller wants $140K. Most wholesalers, most investors would look at that situation and say, and throw that deal and throw that lead in the trash. Not enough equity, not enough juice, can't make money. That particular deal is going to represent over $43,000 to Steve. And he breaks down exactly how he structured it with the seller. So my friends, without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Really appreciate you. My friends, thank you for tuning into another Flip Empire Masterclass here. I got my buddy Steve Johnson, who I was just in Guatemala with, him and his beautiful wife, Sarah. We spent close to a week there. I don't know what, 4 or 5 days in Guatemala at Master Mission, where essentially we spent half the time masterminding and the other half doing a mission trip working with some of the kids at Escuela Integrada. So Steve and I have been traveling in the same circles for a while now. And so we met just over a year ago in Guatemala. And this is actually our second time hanging out there together. So it's been awesome, awesome getting to know him and becoming friends and just getting to know him and his wife and their business and all the stuff they're doing in their local market. So Steve, my brother, pleasure to have you on, man.
Thanks for having me, Alex. I'm happy to be here, man.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to have you on as well. So, dude, like I just mentioned, it was, I always appreciate, you know, getting to put a face to the name. I had heard so many good things about you from Terry Royce and from other people. You're just a quality dude. And I think whether you recognize this or not, I think a unique ability you have is, creative deal structuring. And one of the things that I think the main thing I really want to focus this podcast on is you've done so many deals throughout the years. And yet I remember one of the first conversations we had was about some of the creative deals that you were doing back in 2019. And then some of the ones that you've done already. And I think we're going to be talking about one that you're currently working on. So brother, I'm going to be taking notes, you know, for myself as much as I think the audience is as well, because while I've done creative deals, I don't think I've done them to your level. And I know that yours has multiple layers. So what I'd like to do, man, is before we get into that, I kind of already, you know, gave people a little bit of an introduction as to who you are, how you got, but how'd you get started in this business? What year was that? And then we'll kind of hit the fast forward to what your business looks like today.
So I started in this business around 2012. It started with heading to a Friday free seminar with Robert Kiyosaki, and it turned into a 3-day, which turned into, you know, 8 of his classes with, you know, the mentors and the coaches. And yeah, I kind of dove all in. And my wife and I went full-time about 6 years ago now. So we actually started, I give a lot of credit to Joe McCall. He really helped get me off of the ground with respect to, you know, going from pad and paper to what we now affectionately refer to as the CRM. Back then, that was new to me. I didn't know what that was. So Joe got me off the ground and out of the day-to-day rat race. And we started about 6 years ago wholesaling and buying rentals. And we've been buying and selling and flipping and focusing on growing the portfolio ever since. The one thing we don't do is big rehabs. We do partner on big rehabs, but primarily we focus on wholesale, wholetail, if you will. And we will partner on larger rehabs with other rehabbers, small rehabs, you know, easy stuff we knock out ourselves, but primarily we're in the market to buy and hold rentals these days.
Okay, got it. And so you leverage your wholesaling operation, which you and I both know is really a marketing business, right? And so we generate leads, and then is the strategy for you to cherry pick wholesale the ones that you don't want to, you know, put into your portfolio and cherry pick the ones you do?
That's exactly it. The wholesale business feeds the stuff we want to keep, and you know, the stuff that we flip off to the side generally takes care of the marketing funnel and okay, keeping food on the table, if you will. You know, it takes care of the day-to-day stuff.
Yep, got it. And you're doing this primarily in your market in Tampa, or are you doing this in any other market?
I'm only focused right now in the Tampa Bay area, primarily Pinellas County. I have gone outside of this area a few times, lending-wise specifically, but primarily we were in Pinellas County and surrounding areas.
Got it. Well, brother, I'm excited about this. And I think this is the, you know, the type of X's and O's podcast that people need to listen to, because you and I both know that, you know, when we market and we connect with homeowners, most wholesalers or most investors only have one arrow in their quiver, and that's a low cash offer. The challenge is, especially in the type of competitive environment and market that you and I are both in and that many listening to show are in, is that we're competing on price. And we're competing against everyone else out there that's basically offering sellers the same thing. No closing costs, no commissions, you know, closing on the date of your choice, all that kind of good stuff, right? So talk to us about why understanding how to creatively structure deals is even important and why people need to be listening to be able to put this additional arrow in their quiver.
Well, I think at the foundation of it, if you're gonna own an investment property, It could be a different resource as well, but we're focused on real estate here. So if you're going to own an investment property or more accurately, if you're going to come into this business and think that you're going to start as a wholesaler, which a lot of people want to come in and they say, I want to be a wholesaler, I'm going to find deals. It's really difficult to understand what a real deal looks like until mm-hmm. you've been involved in a real deal. If you ask most realtors out there, they're going to tell you that a 90 cent on the dollar offer doesn't exist, or that those deals don't exist where you and me are buying them for 40, 50, 60 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. Well, there's the other side of it where people believe that there's no such thing as a no money down rental. And that's true under most scenarios, unless you're only targeting no money down rentals and you target the right client. So in the creative world, I think it's really important that you understand what each part of it is. And I've often broken it down to very simple steps. You're going to get paid up front. You're going to get paid while you hold, or you're going to get paid in the end. And if you understand the different points in time where you can get a return on your capital, that you're going to have the opportunity to sell that deal to another investor, whether you get it for no money down and you assign that transaction for $10,000 down, or you get it for 0% interest so you don't take any money up front, but maybe you make, you know, you wrap it with a 5% mortgage and you make $200 a month and your buyer brings the down payment to the table, or you amortize the loan and you sell on interest only for the same amount, and then in 5 years you get a spread on the back end. Okay. Those are three simple ways to get paid. And when you're a wholesaler, you're out there looking for deals, and you recognize that the investors are going to be looking to get paid at one of three points during the transaction, you can help account for one of those other points that's soft, and you can harden that point and get paid front, middle, or end. And better yet, you can sell that deal to another investor as a high yield transaction, whether it be relative to down payment, whether it be during the hold period or whether it be at the end. So yeah, it's important to understand what a deal looks like. And that can look like a buy, renovate, sell. It can look like a buy, renovate, rent, refi, hold, and give to your kids. The transaction can be long, you know? Yeah. So at each point, there's a way to get paid. And to understand the deal is how you're going to sell the deal to other investors. And the more you can talk in their language, the closer you're going to get to the people that are really doing big business.
Got it. So let me take a step back, and I'm going to ask you a question, and then I want to jump in too, because you kind of led me where I was going to ask you next. You said, as long as you talk their language, you and I both know it's critically important to understand what the seller's needs are, what their situation is, so that then you can figure out how to structure a deal that serves them ultimately, and that works, you know, based on you know what it is that you're trying to accomplish. But the step back I want to take is from a marketing angle, Steve, are you doing something to target homeowners that might be more open to a creative deal? Or is this just part of your everyday marketing and you've just identified either through a series of questions or whatever the case might be that, hey, look, here's why I asked this. In our case here in South Florida, I would probably say 8 or 9 out of 10 homeowners we meet with are in a situation then where they want and or need cash. And so I'm curious if there's anything you're doing to from a marketing angle or to target homeowners that you think might be in a position where they'd be open to, you know, holding a note.
So to answer the question specifically in the marketing arena, I would say that we're targeting motivation and motivation only. I'm less interested in 50%, 40%, 30% equity, although that is part of the criteria. I'm looking for a reason to sell.
Okay.
And I'll give you a really quick example, and I'll try to use round numbers. If they're off a little bit, forgive me. I hope you guys get the gist. But we just did a transaction probably 4 months ago where we were going to buy the property for roughly $170,000. It would have been a good deal at $170,000.
Okay.
Buy it, fix it, sell it. It was a high two sell. The guy needed $20,000. He had a $150,000 mortgage. Now there's a few thousands in here, but we'll use round numbers. Mm-hmm. So as we went through title work, we found out he had a second position mortgage on the property that was worth $24,000, I think, or $22,000. So basically ate all his equity. So rather than closing it cash and him walking with 20, we were able to convert that and say, we don't have to go borrow, and it wasn't me, it was my borrower or my buyer. but I spoke as if it was me. I don't have to go borrow this money to buy your asset at 12% or whatever the value is today. And because of that, I can pay you more if you'll leave your $150,000 mortgage in place for 1 year. So the amount that I would pay in interest was offset by his lower mortgage payment every month.
Okay.
So that difference was enough that I was able to give the seller I think it was right around 20,000, maybe 18,000 and some change, or 19,000. It was really close to that, and still buy the house. We were able to renovate it and sell it. My buyer bought it subject to the existing. The seller got almost the exact same amount they were going to get within a couple thousand bucks. We were able to accommodate both the buyer and the seller. And the buyer was able to get in with less money and flip the deal. And that was one quick way to creatively save a deal that otherwise wouldn't have been able to be saved.
What was the after repaired value on that particular property in that example?
I want to say it was high twos. Let me say 285, 290, somewhere in that range.
Okay. And so he had $150,000 first. He had a $24,000 second, and he was looking to walk away with $20K in his pocket. Mm-hmm. So... And I'm assuming you were in a position where you weren't comfortable closing at 194 and giving him what, ultimately satisfying the two mortgages and putting the 20 in his pocket. At 194, would that have been a deal for you?
No, because there's still money for me to be made, and I don't do $30,000 rehabs. This was a $30,000 rehab, or maybe a $40,000.
Okay.
But there was just there, it was too thin there for me to take down and be comfortable. Once I ink it, I want to close it, especially when it's creative. We're really focusing more in the direction of closing what we eat.
Understood. So now, instead of, and I'm kind of reverse engineering the process for the benefit of somebody listening. So, cause I really want you guys to kind of see big picture how this works. Instead of Steve going and either using his own cash, a hard money loan, a private lender, a JV partner, instead of him going out and having to put probably with closing costs close to 200 grand out to purchase this asset, satisfy the two liens and put the 20 in the seller's pocket, what you did was you put about 18 to 19 grand in the seller's pocket, and you kept both mortgages, you kept them in place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. Got it. And then what was the principal, interest, taxes, insurance, ballpark with the two mortgages? Like, what were you out of pocket?
I could tell you it was under 800 bucks a month. It was, It was like seven, 800 a month, something like that.
Okay, beautiful. And what'd you end up selling the asset for?
I wasn't bringing this up as a deal. I think we made 10 grand on that deal.
Okay.
Is what it ended up being. We were trying to make a little bit more and give the seller a little bit more when it all started. We actually thought there was about 25 or 26 in there for him.
Got it.
So we thought that 20 wouldn't be a problem at all.
Okay.
But that was just a quick flip into a creative way to save a deal that normally, you know, I wouldn't have been able to save just on the cash basis. If we looked at it 285, and we want to be conservative, so let's even call it 275. You figure there's going to be somewhere around 25,000 in closing costs. So now I'm down to 250. If I would have taken it down at 195 and put 30 in it, it just would have been too thin across the board.
Yeah, understood. So, brother, what do you, when you first meet with sellers, and I like the fact that you said, hey, we target motivation. We don't necessarily target, is the seller more open to do a seller finance? You target motivation. Makes a ton of sense. When you meet with sellers, are you typically, I know there's people out there that might offer they might give the seller two or three different offers. They might give them a very, very low cash offer. And then, you know, they might offer a listing. They might offer a creative structure. And the creative, there's so many ways to cut up and slice the deal, right? At what point do you even introduce a creative scenario? Is it when you know your cash offer isn't going to work? Walk us through what that conversation looks like with the seller.
I start that at the very beginning when I'm asking about the seller's needs. Like, what is it that you need? What would be the perfect way to walk away from this transaction? If you could have everything that you want in this transaction, what would that look like? And then, you know, I usually roll right into, so do you need all the money today or probably not? Do you need all the money today, or is it okay if you get some money over time? What are your financial needs today? Those are some of the questions that I ask, because what I'm really wanting to know is, Mr. Seller, will you take a little bit today and some over time, and then maybe a chunk at the end, or hold it for a long period of time? Mr. Seller, are you going to be taxed on this? Can we can we mitigate some of these taxes? Can I help you spread this out over time and buy a piece each year? And in that case, we can spread their taxation over a longer duration. So there's different ways when you hear sellers talk or when you're trying to determine their needs. Do they really need the money today? And do they need all $150,000? Are they really just looking to get that $30,000 so they can put their daughter's wedding together for them? And then I can take that house and put a renter in it or a nice family in it and own it for a long, long time.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think has been helpful for us, Steve, and you probably have your way of asking, is we ultimately find out what are the seller's plans with those proceeds. Now, you know, John Martinez might call that like a quote unquote dangerous question, right? Like, so it's all in how you ask it. But if you can find out what the seller's plans are, to your point, you might realize that, hey, they don't need the 150. What they really need is 30 because of X, Y, Z, or, you know, whatever the case might be. I know when we're dealing with probates or inherited properties and there's multiple siblings involved, we try to break it down to, hey, what does each sibling want to walk away with? Not, hey, what are you looking to sell the property for? And oftentimes you'll find that what they really want is 10 or 15 or 20 grand versus if you ask, hey, what do you want to sell it for? It ends up adding up to, I don't know, 200 grand. Like, there's just a difference in how you ask it, right? Yeah. So once you ask those questions, once you find out ultimately what they want, what they need, if they say, hey, I want cash, which is what we hear predominantly, you know, most of the time that's what we hear. Do you still push the envelope? Do you kind of take it in a different angle to really find out if that's ultimately what they want? Or are you realizing if they tell you, hey, I'm just looking for straight cash, you're kind of just not going in that creative deal structure route?
Yeah, I'm not a hard sell. We're there to assist. We're there to help with some sort of an inconsistency in life for them. What they're missing or lacking in some resource, whatever that may be. It could be a, you know, emotional support. It could be a family member. It could be money. It could be a whole lot of things. Time. Yeah. You know, they're just too busy, or they have a relative who's living in there. There's a bunch of reasons it could happen. I really just want to know if right. I can help, and if I can do that and still make a little bit of profit, then I'm in on it. Provided that there's a back end exit. You know, so there's so many exits, and I really play in the rental price range because I can rent there, I can sell there, I can. We don't owner finance out to owner ox. We have done some contract for options with owner ox rather than seller finance. Okay. But mostly our stuff is in and out to other investors, and we just take a spread.
Okay.
You know, I can give you an example of a deal that we're working on now.
Yeah.
Let's
hop into a case study. And then as that one unfolds, I'll probably have a few questions for you as it relates to how the conversation with the seller and how you ultimately like inked that type of deal. But yeah, let's jump into, I know you were telling me before we started recording, is this the one that you're currently working on now?
Yeah, we were supposed to close a couple days ago. We're waiting for an addendum to come back, but like, we should be closing this any day, and we've got the buyer lined up on the backside as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. So what's this thing look like?
So this one, this started out as a duplex, or, you know, two house, one parcel where we're at. We're in Pinellas. It's a three bed, two bath, wood frame house, large by our standards anyway. It's roughly 1,100, 1,200 square foot.
Okay.
And out back, it's got a one bed, one bath, one car garage detached with separate electric and water. So that's the house that we're buying. The location is in Clearwater, Florida. It's a transitional area. I wouldn't call it great. I wouldn't call it hood. But it's a place that used to be rougher. There was a lot of low income stuff there previously, and it's kind of up and coming. Very street by street. We buy a lot in the transitional neighborhoods.
Okay, so probably a C minus area, you would say?
I would say B minus, C plus, probably closer to C plus. The age, it's up there in age, so I'd give it I don't think a C minus, because it's not, you're going to deal with guns and drugs and violence. It's just it's transitioning to a better place.
Understood.
So this property, I'd say if you put it on the market, you could probably get somewhere around 175,000 to 180,000 for it after you put about 8,000 in it.
Okay.
So my cash offer to him when we first started talking was 90,000. That didn't work for him. The seller said, I want $140,000. And And I said, well, at 140, I hope that you're okay financing that. And he agreed. And so we just started talking about what he wanted. And he came right out and said, I want 10% down and 700 a month. And so I looked at the details, and in that area, those two units, the three bedroom and the one unit, should rent somewhere between 1,800 and 2,000 a month.
Okay.
Pretty easily. So my rough number, I love 35% or less mortgage payments. So if I'm going to rent it for 1,000 and I can pay 350 or less PI, I'll take that deal.
Okay. If you can rent it for 1,000 and your principal interest, taxes, and insurance is no more than 350, is that what it is?
If just my PI is less than 350, I'll take it. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So 35% is your kind of your formula.
Well, that's my favorite. I've taken more, but that's my favorite. If I could design it any other way, that's how I would design it. Because generally speaking, you know, you're gonna lose 40% in occupational expenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So occupancy expenses.
Yeah, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Operational expenses. There we go.
Yep.
So you're gonna eat up property management, maintenance, vacancy. We handle all the capex up front. So if I give 35% away, then that means that with 40% operational expenses and 35% for the debt service, then I'm going to be around 25% of that asset itself.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm going to take home. So that leaves me a little bit of meat.
Got it. And Steve, so, you said that the seller wanted 10% down and how much? 700 a month?
700 a month. Yep.
Okay. Got it. And you said this thing could rent for about, on a good day, about 2,000.
Yep. Yeah. If you went Section 8, you may be able to get a few bucks more, but realistically 1,800 to 2,000.
Okay. So dude, there's some juice there. Okay.
Yeah. So in this case, I'm going to use round numbers. I actually got it for 138,000 with 13,800 down. I'm going to call it 140,000 with 15 grand down, because I account for closing costs. I know there's going to be some prepaids coming back, but I'm just going to use round numbers for ease.
Okay. So you actually got him his purchase price of 140.
I'm going to give him 138, and he put an AC in for me. We started at 135. He ended up putting an AC in for me. So it's got new roof, new AC, new windows. It needs about $8,000 worth of work.
Okay. Got it. And you put 15K down.
Yeah. We're going to call it that. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll buy it for 140. And I'll put 15,000 down at the table. So I'll have a note for about 125,000. I got that note. It's actually 124.2 is the number. And it runs out at 5.5% for 30 years with a 10-year balloon. So I've got 10 years to figure out what I'm going to do with this asset.
What kind of financing is this, by the way?
Owner financing. Came straight from the seller.
Okay,
now let me note something for the listeners here. This seller has a mortgage on it currently of over $70,000. He's going to be bringing $70,000 to the table to close this deal. So he's paying $70,000 to get my $700 and change a month.
Interesting.
Okay.
Wow.
And now I offered to wrap that mortgage and keep it in place for him. He wanted first position. That's what made him comfortable. And he was comfortable coming to the table. So we started as a cash deal. We offered creative financing. He accepted with his terms being 10% and 700 a month. And he's bringing the money to the table. Now
10% down and 700 a month, but 5.5% interest, you said.
For 30 years, amortized, and in 10 years, I'll owe 115-ish, somewhere in that ballpark, 115.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, actually, I'll a little less than that. I think I owe 150. I took some notes so I could have this conversation. After 5 years, I owe 114 is what it is. But we can look up an amortization schedule and know for sure. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, so the buy, let's go over the buy really quickly. I've got $15,000 up front, $705 a month, and it's currently rented for $1,500 a month. And I'm taking those tenants on. And as they move out, I'm going to put the 8,000 in.
Let me ask you a question. Do you have any idea if it was currently rented for, you said $1,500 a month, any particular reason why he wanted $700?
He's selling off his portfolio.
Okay. I was going to ask you, what's his...
He's selling off one house at a time. And he's just getting rid of them one at a time. And this was the next one on the list. The front unit went vacant. And in this case, I had bought a house from him before. So this is the second house I bought from him. And in this case, he had somebody living in the back that wanted to move in the front. The front moved out. He didn't want to do the rehab. He'd already lined up the AC, and he didn't want to do the rehab. So he said he'd sell it to me if I'd do the rehab.
Okay. Wow. What's really interesting about this so far is that this seller was willing to come to the table with 70K just to pay off that first mortgage. Very interesting. Okay.
Peace of mind. He doesn't have to manage the asset anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally got it.
A trustworthy payer on the other end. That's valuable. If your payer is a renter, or your payer is a borrower, it doesn't matter. You want a good borrower or a good payer on the other end, regardless of the circumstances.
Not to mention, Steve, you had already bought a property from him, and knowing you, you treated him well, you performed, you did everything you said you were going to do, and I'm sure that bought you some goodwill and equity in this deal.
Yep, absolutely.
So, okay, beautiful. So just to recap the numbers, let me kind of 175K ARV after an 8K rehab is what it would need. You made him a cash offer of 90. That didn't fly with him. He wanted 140. He wanted 10% down, 700 a month. Could rent for between 1800 and 2000. And ultimately, once he put in an AC closing cost, roughly you ended up purchasing the property for 140 with 15,000 down. And then he took back a note for 124,200 at 5.5% amortized over 30 years with a 10-year balloon.
Yep.
Beautiful. Yep. Got it. Okay.
So that's step one. Now, step two, remember, I don't like big rehabs, and we're trying to grow a portfolio. You can't manage everything you buy, and you don't have to own everything you buy either. And so in this case, in full disclosure, this is an individual I have done sandwich lease options before.
Okay, hold on.
He doesn't need to own them. I'm sorry.
Pause it there. What's a quick explanation for somebody listening? What's a sandwich lease option?
Okay, so when you lease a property, it's just like any other type of rental, right? If you rent it from somebody, hey, Alex, I'm going to rent your property for $1,000 a month. If I were to sublease that to somebody else for, say, $1,500 a month, then I would sandwich that lease and I would keep the $500 a month. Okay.
Got it.
In an option, it's the exact same thing. I purchase the option and then I can sell that option. Mm-hmm. Right. So when I say I did a sandwich lease option, that means that I stayed in the middle of the lease and the option period. So I'm still responsible to my landlord, who I rented the property from, to pay my rent to them and manage the asset. Mm-hmm. What I did is I gave the management to somebody else for a fee greater than what I'm paying. So I keep the spread. They continue to manage the asset. If there's any problems, they manage the asset. And then I just keep the spread and I get the benefits of ownership or being on title, right? I'm on title. Not in the sandwich lease option deal. The deal that we're talking about today, I'll be on title. In that's a sandwich lease option, that's not.
You're not owning. Correct. Right. Correct.
So what we're doing different on this one is we're going to treat it the same, but I'm going to take title and then I'm going to sell a contract for option, which is a little bit different than a lease option in that they don't actually get the option until they execute to the terms and conditions of the lease that they sign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
And I can, hopefully everybody followed that. As long when you exercise a lease, it's just a simple rental agreement. When you exercise an option, you're putting up some sort of,
consideration.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For the option itself to purchase the property, not the obligation, but the option to purchase the property at some point in time in the future. And that could be limited both by time from execution, or like you can say you can't buy it before 2 years or after 10, or you could say you have the option to buy it for 30 years or whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Okay. Not to sidetrack, but you know what, when I hear you, Steve, talk about options, I think about our boy, Pete Fortunato, and all the options that guy probably has like under his pillow and mattress and just, options. I mean, we could probably do a whole separate podcast and seminar on just options. I mean, so yeah, options can be very, very powerful.
I love that guy. He's been an amazing mentor to me, and I really have a high level of respect for him and the integrity of what he does. And he's a great mentor, a great teacher. If you have the chance to see him speak, man, he's an amazing person to watch speak. You'll walk and Yeah, it's 3 days and your mind is just blown.
Extremely, extremely technical. And right. Man, I've been in this business a long time, and I a couple of years ago, and then we'll jump back on this case study. Dude, a couple of years ago, I went to go see him speak. It was I think it was like a Dykes Botterford and Pete Fortunato deal. And man, there was a certain percentage of that weekend that was kind of over my head. Or I'm like trying to follow. I'm like, hold on. Back. It was... I mean, that guy has forgotten more about this type of stuff than most people know. So
he's an amazing, amazing dude for sure.
Yeah.
I'm really blessed to be on the coast near him. He doesn't live too far from here. I really admire that guy. So we won't go further into that, but if Pete's listening, man, love
really,
Pete.
Really cool. Yeah. Really good guy. Guy's been in
one day. He might listen to us, Alex. You hear that? Maybe Pete could listen to us.
I don't know about that, but you never know, dude. You never know, my man. You never know. So what did this deal end up looking like, man? As far as okay. Like,
so on the back end, so in this business, ownership is not the entire game. It's about the cash flow. It's about grabbing a little piece and continuing to move on and create value in every experience, right? Mm-hmm. So on the back end of this, what we did is we sold this. Now remember, if we do the math, I'm going to do simple math. Just as the asset sits today. Okay, I'm just going to do it as it sits today. If we were to take $1,500 a month in gross rental income, and I'm going to take it times 0.65, I'm going to go a little more conservative, minus 705. So we've got 1,500 times 0.65 means we're going to account for
35% in debt service.
Well, yeah, 65% of the income we're going to keep minus $700 in payments. We've got $275 a month, which is $3,300 a year over. Well, we're actually going to put $23,000 in if we were to keep it, right?
Yeah, let's actually backtrack. So people understand why you're multiplying by 65%. Like, okay. Let's break it down. So you put $15,000 down, and then you're going to put another $8,000 into the property. So you're out of pocket $23,000, correct?
Right. So okay. Let's use the math that we talked about earlier. Okay. We'll keep it super simple. Which was, did we do 70% of the ARV is the math that we talked about earlier?
Let me see here. I don't think you even, so you said the ARV was 175 after you put $8,000 yep. into it. And then you ended up getting the deal for about 140 and $15,000 down.
Okay. So we'll just make it easy. $1,500 a month in gross income today. Yep. Times 0.65, which means I'm accounting for 35% operational expenses, right. Minus 705 a month, which is my payment. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that means I've got 270 a month coming in.
Yep. Right?
So I'm going to, at 12 months, and this is super conservative, right? So I'm going to have about $3,240 a year coming in on that asset over $23,000. Investment, which is 14% cash on cash or cash on cash return. I should make 14%. And that includes a 10% reserve for CapEx and maintenance. That mm-hmm. includes 10% for property management. So once this asset is stabilized, you're very well going to do better than that, right? There's a spread there. Besides the PITI, there's plenty to keep. So we're buying it at 14%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it. Steve, let me ask you, for somebody listening and says, well, what if you have, you know, it, within that 35% that you took off, you know, you talked about 10%. Are you factoring in already the 10%. So if you have 1 month of vacancy, you've already factored that into your formula, correct?
Yeah. My wife and I always reserve every month, whether we have a maintenance expense or 10%. Not. The stuff that's leveraged has reserve at the bank, you know, mm-hmm. if you have prepaids. If there's no prepaids, usually we have 4 months reserve and $3,000 for each asset. And after that, we run wide open.
Yeah. Yeah. Understood. Okay. Got it. So where do we go from here on this particular deal? So you got 14% cash on cash.
Right. So I'm going to turn around. I'm going to sell this to somebody who's a buy and hold guy. That's all he does. He doesn't look for deals. He's not looking to get paid. He has cash. He's looking to put it in the game. So the way I sold this asset is I sold it for $20,000 down.
So you almost got all of your out of pocket back.
No, I'm not doing repairs now. I don't do the repairs.
So
kicker. We just know that it needs $8,000. I'm not doing the $8,000.
Oh, also, So isn't your cash on cash higher than Steve if you didn't put the
It will be, but right now we're focusing on the purchase, which we just did. So okay. Now we go to the sale. If I was to purchase that asset, that's what I would do. Okay. However, I'm going to sell this asset the same day I buy it. This is going to be simultaneous, just like a cash transaction. And it doesn't have to be. I could do the repairs and sell it later on MLS. I could, in this case, I don't want to do the repairs. I don't want to deal with the tenant to do the repairs. So I'm going to sell this asset for $160,000 with $20,000 down. And I sold it at 8% interest only, which is $934 a month.
Okay. So you got a delta.
My payment's $705, I think. So I've got a $225 a month spread.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've got $5,000 in my pocket.
The 20 minus the 15?
Yep. $20,000 that he gave me minus the 15.
Yep.
I don't have to fix the house up because he's going to take that on. I've already got the inspection report, so it's got everything that needs to be fixed on it. He's seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I get the $933 a month, which is roughly $225 a month, over $100 a door. And then I'm going to give him 5 years to exercise that option. I'm sorry. He doesn't, not to exercise the option, but to execute. Yeah, to execute his contract for option.
The contract, because that's right. This is a contract for option. Understood.
It's a contract for option. He doesn't get the option until he abides by the terms and the conditions of the contract. And that way I can stay true to my seller by still owning and maintaining that asset. I'm not selling the asset. So there's no due on sale. I'm just leasing it with and allowing him to sublease it to the tenants that are already there. Okay. Okay. Just like hiring a management company, but now he has the opportunity to own it after he puts his work in.
That's right. That's right. But you're still involved and connected into the in the deal until he abides by the terms of his contract for got it.
I now have one renter instead of having multiple renters because I had a duplex. The front had three tenants in it, the back had one, and now I have one tenant instead of four tenants.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to deal with any of the maintenance.
Yeah. Okay.
So I went from so wrap it all back around. In 5 years, he'll buy that asset, or maybe he won't. He has the option to. He doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. But in 5 years, he can buy that that asset for $160,000 minus the 20 he gave me. So he'll owe me $140,000. Now remember, during that period of time, I was paying down the seller to roughly $115,000.
Mm-hmm.
So in 5 years, I'll get paid again the difference 25. Between the 140
and 115. Yeah, about a 25K you'd get in 5 years if he executes, you know, and he buys the asset. If he doesn't buy, it could be a rinse and repeat. Now, granted, you have a 10-year balloon, but you could probably rinse and repeat it.
But that's why I always make my second side, the people that I'm selling to is always shorter, right? It's always a shorter term. I bought 10 years, I'm selling on five. I'm okay doing that one or two more times. If you want to give me 20 grand and walk, that's not what I wanted. It's not the deal, but you can do that if you decide you don't want the asset. That's up to you as the buyer.
Yeah, right?
And we build extensions in as well. The intention is always to move forward with the transaction the way that was set up. But we build extensions in as well. And you know, we don't want people to lose money. We want people to win. Whatever that win looks like, everybody's going to win.
Well, brother, here's what's so powerful about this, right? And this is what I'm really hoping, you know, whoever's listening to this and the audience, what really grabs onto $175,000 ARV. If we were to like go back to the beginning of this deal and the seller wanted 140, most investors that don't have your knowledge and or just don't know how to creatively structure these deals would walk away from that deal because they look at it and they said, there's only 35K in equity when you factor in closing costs, blah, blah, blah. There's no juice in the deal, but you were able to take that same deal and essentially turn it into $5,000 in your pocket on the day of closing. You created a spread of about 230-ish something dollars a month for the next 5 years. And if that particular buyer executes on that option, you're put another $25,000 in your pocket. So all in all, 230 times 60 months of payments is 13.8 plus 5,000 you put in your pocket plus another 25,000 on the back end, 43,800 bucks if my math is right.
Yep. And this deal, we pitched this deal and we got $10,000 offers all day. So we could go and just take a quick $10,000 today if we wanted to. And we might be able to push that to 12. But in this case, in addition to the $43,000, the most powerful part of this is that we're not going to buy it and sell it in the same year. It's beyond a year in our it's beyond a year and a day. So what does that do for our taxable income? On this deal, it reduces the taxable income of this deal. In addition to that, we get depreciation over that 5-year period, right? While so we get tax advantages not only in depreciation but also at the sale. Plus, we have cash flow and we have an asset. It's a win across the board. So we took $10,000 or zero in most cases and turned it into over $40,000. We'll eat for that. We'll eat on this deal for the next 5 years or more. And no management, no rehab, no repairs, just deal structure.
It's a beautiful thing. How involved are you? Like, let's fast forward 2 years from now, you know, how involved are you in this transaction? Assuming you're one tenant, i.e. the guy who, you know, has another 3 years left to execute the option. How involved are you assuming he's paying?
I would have no involvement at all.
No,
I mean, amazing. As far as our involvement with the seller, my commitment to him is $705 a month, which is on auto pay.
Yeah.
And provided the taxes.
Okay. So you don't have like a loan servicing company or anything like that?
No, we run them just like leases. And my office manager handles all the leasing and the management side. So she collects the check and takes care of, you know, any notices, which are few and far between. I mean, we try to really only do business with people that we trust and know and have done business with before. You know, it makes things easier because you can trust these people. And in 5 years, when he wants to buy it, if he decides to buy it, he's going to call the same title company that we both use and we're going to close the deal. So as far as involvement, one of the reasons that I really like these creative deals where I'm the owner and then I lease it with the option or I contract for option to the tenants is that I don't have to deal with the day to day. And I know that I'm dealing with somebody who has a portfolio. Their only interest is in creating income greater than what they're paying me. So they have the same interest as I do.
Yeah.
So when all those interests align, it creates a momentum and I feed off that.
Okay. Okay. Steve, I'm curious, man, because the keys that I'm hearing and that what I, and correct me if I'm wrong or add anything that I'm missing. To your point, you want to make sure that the time period you give your buyer is much shorter than the time period you have with your seller. Yeah. Right. You also, it was interesting to me that you gave the seller pretty much exactly what he wanted. You gave him the 10% that he wanted down, and he asked for, it was his terms, 5.5% over 30 years, 10-year balloon. That's pretty much what he wanted.
I want 10% down and $700 a month.
Okay, so you just backed into that number.
Yeah, I just made it work because I knew it's $700 a month. It was less than half of $1,500, and we were going to go up from there.
Okay. You know? Okay. Beautiful. This is hard to maybe talk about or illustrate on a podcast, but what's for somebody listening, like what's the paperwork on this look like?
That's very specific to the structure of the deal. I don't want to go into the documents because I'm not an attorney or a CPA. So should we disclose that?
I love this. I CYA all the time, my man. So yep. Yeah. I get it.
For the most part, I lean on my title company for the structures or the documents themselves to make it all correct. I've been to some Pete Fortunato classes, so I have a few of these documents that we used and we've used over the years that we've kind of made our own. More specifically, in the note, mortgage, and contract for option field, but they're pretty simple documents considering the option. You know, most of us have options in our file folders in our office. You know, we give these cash offers. They just happen to be 30-day closes rather than 30-year closes. You know, so documents, you can get that stuff from any attorney online. But as far as contracts for options and lease with options, they're very simple leases and they all refer back to an option of some sort. The option is recordable. A contract for option is not.
Not recordable, right?
That's a big difference. When we buy, we always buy with options. When we sell, we always sell on a contract for option.
Correct. Yeah. You want your option reported, but not necessarily with your buyer. Right.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Because if they default, then I don't have a way to help my original seller. I need to remain in control because of my commitments.
Yeah.
Or at least that's my understanding of the structure. So.
I love it, brother. I love it. Well, hey, look, the purpose of this was really what I wanted to do was just kind of open people's eyes to the possibilities that exist when you're able to creatively structure deals. Let's start to kind of wind down the show, and I got a couple more questions for you, and these are more rapid fire, but let's, out of every 20 appointments that you or your, you know, salesperson, your acquisitions person goes on, how many of those 20 would you say are willing to accept your low cash offer, somewhere between 40 and 60, 40 and 70 cents in the dollar?
I would say it's getting more and more people that you have to visit before they say yes, now than it was 3 years ago, for sure.
So maybe one or two of the 20, maybe?
Yeah, I would say you're probably on point. I mean, if we go see eight to 12, I expect some action, you know, to come around the corner. Used to be every 14 to 16, we would walk with a contract.
Okay.
Nowadays I'm seeing more, we're closing and wholesaling about 1 in 4, the ones that we're taking down, and we're letting go probably 3 out of 4. And by that, I mean, before we close it. And I'd say of the creative world, we're probably 1 in 8, 1 in 10.
So there you go. That's exactly why I asked you that, because to use my numbers, Steve, if you're going on 20 appointments, most wholesale.
Sorry, Alex, I mean 1 in 8 contracts. Yeah, 1 in 8 contracts. So if you got to hit 10 appointments, then 1 in 80 appointments.
Yeah. You know, the point really is that when you're able to do these, you're going to be able to convert more, because most sellers are not willing to accept your, you know, 50, 60 cents on the dollar offer. But when you're able to structure deals like this, number one, you're turning leads into cash that most investors either don't know how to do or wouldn't do. And number two, you're just going to convert at a higher clip, because now you have more ways to potentially help the seller get what they want.
Yep. Yeah, so, there's other ways to get paid too. You don't have to stay in these deals. You know, if you wanted to take a quick 10 grand and just give them a 705 a month payment, if you called me and wanted 25 grand for 705, I'd probably take it. Mm. You know, if the 8,000 a rehab wasn't, this just isn't the house for me, but I like those kind of deals.
Yeah.
You know, those are high yield deals, but most people don't know how to put those together. So there's a lot of investors out there that got 20 grand laying around that just want to buy a rental house, even if it doesn't make them, you know, 800 a month. They just want to get in the game. They already have jobs and they just want to buy a nice rental. So there's clients out there for these creative deals. There's more clients for creative deals than any cash deal you're going to find.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Is there anything you're doing? And we'll start to wrap as you kind of hear the sirens behind my office here. My apologies. But is there anything you're doing in particular to market these deals to find your buyers? Or are you marketing these just like you would any other wholesale deal?
I talk to the guys who I know are long-term buy and hold guys. They're going to go find the down payment from somebody else or one of their income streams. They're going to put it down. They're going to buy it and they're going to hold it. I'm not looking for flippers. I have a handful of those guys in the area that I know and trust that I call. But for the most part, you know, I'm pitching these as amount down, yield while you hold, and a sell at the end. And if you can be just under retail with under 20,000 down, most of these houses are selling. You know, most of the houses are selling. It just seems to be under 20,000 down, you're going to get somebody to buy these properties, because there's so many people out there with 20 grand that want to get in the game. There's just so many people that have 20 grand that want to get in the game. I can't emphasize that enough. If you just focus on what's the down payment, What's the monthly payment and what's the end, you're going to be able to create some deals, and then you can talk about structure. And I think that's really important to note. Most people want to say, do I sell or finance it, or contract for option, or lease with an option, or reverse mortgage, or short sale, or foreclosure? Like, they have all these words. They don't know what any of them mean. Really, it all boils down to what's the upfront, what's the middle, and what's the end. And then you can figure out whether you need to own it or simply control it. And then you can sell the control, or you can sell the ownership, you can sell the contract, but you have an asset that you control that you can sell.
I love it, brother. I love it. My man, I appreciate you dropping some knowledge. I think this is going to be really just eye-popping for a lot of people listening to this. Where's the best place to connect with you, man? Maybe if somebody, you know, has some deals in your part of town, or maybe they want a JV or whatever the case might be, how do they reach out to you?
For sure, man. Well, we've got our website, seasidepropertysolutions.com. That's SEASIDE property, PROPERTY, solutions, SOLUTIONS.com. It's kind of long, but it works for us. So all that's right. Our website. You can hit me up on Facebook. Steven with a PH, STEPHEN. Johnson is my name. I'm in St. Pete, Florida. You'll probably see me with my kids. That's usually what's on my Facebook. But I'm on Facebook. You can call me. Our line is 813-544-CASH. That's 813-544-2274. You can reach out to me. You can hit me up on my website. Hit me up on Facebook. And if you got the website, my name, my email is my name, S. Johnson, S-J-O-H-N-S-O-N. At seasidepropertysolutions.com. I'd love to hear from you guys. If you got any questions, I love deal structure, man. I'll talk about this stuff all day because it's just that fun.
Yeah, guys. And take him up on that. Steve's a really, really good guy and obviously knows his stuff. I picked up a few things just as far as like questions you ask and how you structure this. And I'm going to have one of our team members, Elizabeth, listen to this podcast as well, because I know it'll help her when she meets with homeowners. So my man, I appreciate you. You got a beautiful family. It's been awesome getting to know you over the course of the last year. Great times in Guatemala, some funny stories, and some I'm looking forward to making that a yearly trip with you. So
for sure, man. It's I feel honored to be on here with the legendary Pardo, man.
Stop, dude.
I'm thankful to be here, and it was great talking with you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you, my friend. So thank you guys for tuning in. I know some of this stuff can be challenging to follow on a podcast versus in person, or even if we were like on a webinar. But I encourage you, this is the type of podcast you want to kind of, you know, hit the rewind and listen to it again. And if anything, just start to, when you guys meet with sellers, when you talk to sellers, ask that additional question, ask those types of questions, take it a step further and find out if what they plan to do with the cash, if they're willing to take it over time, and then just, you know, kind of fail forward if you've never done one of these deals. But start with what the seller wants first, and then back your way into how you can get them that. Understand where your exit strategy might be. And like Steve said, you don't have to own it. You can control it, control the asset, get the cash flow, and go from there. So appreciate you, buddy. We will talk soon.
Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.